You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, John Cena returns as the Peacemaker in The Peacemaker. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, Mr. John Cena. This guy is a big deal to many people for many reasons, and he is a first-time guest on Happy, Sad, Confused today. A delightful chat with a really interesting guy who has fashioned a multifaceted career, a career that has evolved over the last 10, 15 years in ways that many people probably doubted in the beginning. Maybe I was one of them. If you talked to me 12, 13 years ago when John Cena was just starting in film, I probably wouldn't expect him to have the career he has today. But kudos to him. This is a smart guy, a guy with a good head on his shoulders, and very talented. I mean, he is obviously has the chops as a physical performer. I mean, his physicality is something that's, you know, very rarely comes along. But I would argue that as a comedic personality, this guy has the chops, and we've seen it again and again. This is a great chat. His new project is The Peacemaker, which is a new series on HBO Max. It has just debuted. By the time you listen to this, I believe the first 3 episodes debuted on HBO Max this week. I've seen the first 7 of 8. This is something, by the way, here's some inside baseball, something they do, and this is high class problems, but on many occasions, this has happened on a number of recent occasions, I get the screeners for these great new TV series that are coming out, and I'm so stoked. I'm like so lucky. I get to watch like all these Peacemaker episodes. I get to watch, what was another example of this? The After Party. That's another good show coming up. I get to watch all the After Party episodes, and then you realize when you go to the screeners that they give you every one but the last one. So, yes, you're probably like, screw you, Josh. You get to watch 7 episodes of Peacemaker before anybody, but there is a tangible sadness to getting to the end of episode 7 and knowing not only do you not have the last episode, but you're going to have to wait like 3 months before you have to remember, wait, what was I watching? This happened. Okay, this is like an aside on an aside. This the most notable way this happened to me was for Mayor of Easttown, where I was so into that show. They sent me the screeners. And they only, spoiler warning for Mayor of Easttown quickly, I'm not going to spill too much, but I'll vaguely say what happens. They sent a bunch of screeners. It takes you through the end of an episode in which somebody is killed. It is arguably the most dramatic moment of the show outside maybe of the last moments of the show. And same thing happened. I had to wait like 3 months for the rest of the world to catch up. Again, you're probably like, shut up, Josh, whatever. But hey, these are the problems I deal with. Anyway, let's go back to where I started. Peacemaker is the show. Very entertaining. This is all written by the genius that is James Gunn. Of course, Peacemaker appeared in The Suicide Squad, and John was fantastic in that as this like very deadpan, screwed-up hero, an absurd costume. And this show is more of the same, but also a lot of different colors of John Cena and Peacemaker you get to see in this one. More of an ensemble show. It's certainly got the action and the comedy, goes to some dramatic places, it's got some horrific elements to it. You can always count on James Gunn to really mix up genres in a fascinating way. So if you're a fan of his work, if you're a fan of John Cena's work, I think you'll enjoy Peacemaker on HBO Max. And as I said, John, a great chat, a smart guy. He's somebody that I recalled with him talking to him way back when. about his early films. One of his early films was a movie called 12 Rounds, a forgettable, not so great action movie. And this speaks to how many interviews John Cena has done. I mean, I took no offense to this. John Cena has no recollection of the fact that I spent probably an hour with him once at a Cold Stone Creamery in New York City eating 12 rounds of ice cream to promote his film, 12 Rounds. I think that just speaks to either I'm a forgettable personality, let's not go with that assumption, or the fact that John Cena has probably been interviewed 10,000 times in the course of promoting his wrestling and film career. but maybe not so many like this conversation, because this is a deep dive. We, of course, get into his comfort movie, which is an unexpected choice. It's an Adam McKay film, but maybe not the Adam McKay film you would think of as a comfort movie. So stay tuned for that. And I know you guys are going to dig this chat. Other things to mention, not much except that I've been in this like TV kick, guys. I think I mentioned on last week's show, I've just been like catching up on a lot of TV that I hadn't for a while. I think primarily because by the end of the year, I was just like in the movie zone. You want to see all the big 2021 movies for awards consideration, and I've kind of done that outside of one or two things. And then I took the last couple weeks to kind of like get up to speed on TV. And the latest one I saw, and I'm really late to this party, but I want to give it just a big, big recommendation, is Dope Sick, which is on Hulu. And not going to lie, it is pretty dark. When I say pretty dark, it's maybe the most dark TV I've ever seen, and upsetting TV. That being said, very engrossing. Great performances. This is basically the true life story of the OxyContin epidemic that swept through the country in the last couple decades. And it is a real indictment of Purdue, the folks that created OxyContin and the methods they used to sell this product and to lie to the American people. And it is a sobering look at addiction and big pharma. And also, just in terms of a dramatic level and an acting level, has a really impressive group of actors in it, led by the two performances I'll just shout out. Caitlin Dever, previous guest on Happy Sad Confused, and Michael Keaton, also a guest on Happy Sad Confused way back when. Dig into the archives. They're unbelievable, like unbelievable in this show. So, and it's also just like, it's one of those shows where every episode you're like, wait, this person's in it. As you can tell, I'm very much into Dope Sick right now. And yeah, it's a serious show, and it is a dark kind of concept for a show. But if you're in the right headspace, you'll get sucked in too, I think. Okay, that's my plug of the week. Onto lighter fare, certainly Peacemaker is that. It is, oh, by the way, Peacemaker features maybe the best show open of any show currently on TV. That song will just get stuck in your head. All right, let's go to the main event. This is me and Mr. John Cena. Enjoy the chat. Mr. Cena, good morning to you, sir. How you doing, man?
Good morning. I'm still trying to figure out from a technology standpoint how I take myself off the screen so I can just see you.
I think if you maybe click on the three dots next to me and you pin me.
Oh, look at that. Perfect.
We did it. Now
Thank you so much.
Now you are saddled with just staring at my face for the next 35 minutes, John.
I'm okay with. It beats the shit out of staring at mine. So good luck with your perspective.
Thanks so much for doing the podcast today, man. I've always been a fan of your work. And this one, I think, is your best yet. Congratulations on Peacemaker, man.
Oh, I'll take that feedback anytime I can get it. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So I see, as always, impeccably dressed. I was partially hoping, I'm going to be honest, I was hoping a little bit for the Peacemaker outfit this morning. I know you have a lot of affection for it.
No, I do. And I've been very bold and adamant in saying I'll wear it everywhere, but I don't own it. They won't give me a costume. It's certainly property of DC, and they guard it like the nuclear codes. Like every time you see me in it, premieres or all the stuff for the Suicide Squad, it literally was like pulling teeth. And every time I would show up, there would be a costume handler and a props handler to make sure nobody ran off the helmet or the costume. That is heavily guarded IP, as they would say.
Did from the start, once you got into that costume, do people treat you differently when you're walking around in that outfit? They got to.
You know, what a state of that the world is in today. Not really. And like, I'm serious.
On the list of crazy things going on in our world right now, John Cena in this helmet is not.
So, yeah, but at the same time, like, you know, with all the ability to create content, and because it's usually in like media hubs where we are doing a bunch of stuff like New York City, Los Angeles. I have more anonymity in the costume than I do walking down the street. And we did a bit for Jimmy Kimmel where it was like, I was a few buildings down doing a bunch of interviews in the uniform, and I walked on the street to Jimmy Kimmel, and he's right there in the thick of it. And I was passing like Spider-Man and Batman. Nobody gave a shit about me, especially because this is like pre-Suicide Squad. So who the hell is Peacemaker?
Right.
I could just walk down the street. It was great. Everybody just thought I was, you know, a guy trying to work the corner for some Polaroids or a picture or something.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. So before we dive into Peacemaker and some other things, some context, because I've been talking to you for a while. I don't expect you to remember our shared experiences because you've done so much of this stuff over the years, but it does amuse me to think the first time I chatted with you, John, was at a Cold Stone Creamery here in New York City for 12 rounds. And we were...
I do not remember that. I've had some wonderful, experiences at a Cold Stone Creamery, but I don't remember that one.
Oh, wow, you blocked it out. So this, the idea.
I blocked it out. I only got so many parking spaces in the parking lot, man.
No, I got it. I don't take offense. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. But the silly conceit was we were going to eat 12 rounds of ice cream to promote your film.
No way. Yeah. Man, I would love to do that now. You're a forward thinker, man. You're just ahead of your time.
I mentioned that because it dovetails a bit with Peacemaker in this respect for me. My sense about you is John Cena is down. John Cena is ready to go to interesting places if it serves the story, if it serves the narrative, if it serves the whole enterprise. Is that fair to say that you kind of like have that kind of spirit, that kind of attitude about life and career?
I think this may be fair to say. I don't take myself too seriously. So I don't... you know, this is a crazy business. I have no idea what's going on. I play dress up and they pay me, and it's ridiculous. It's not to say that there isn't hard work involved and there isn't effort involved and dedication and all that stuff. But I think anyone who has even a mild sense of sustainability in this thinks it's going to be over in a heartbeat because it's right. It's not a, hey, clock in and work for your pension type, profession. It's we like you one day and we don't like you the next. So I think as you're trying to gain that sustainability, you're trying to protect the attitude you throw out there. And especially I've been so lucky to be doing this for a long time now and realize that I can just enjoy what I do and be comfortable with self. And it is going to end. And when it does, I should be grateful for the experiences that I've had. So to say that I'm down for anything would mean that I have no boundaries. That's false. I do have steadfast boundaries and concrete boundaries and ones that are like, I just canceled an interview with another provider because they were just asking too many questions that crossed my boundaries. That's totally fine. But I am totally okay making fun of myself, being the butt of the joke, being a vehicle for other people to laugh at my expense. That stuff is fine. I don't have to, there is no knight in shining armor or, real superhero persona that I'm trying to protect. I'm just a dude who is one of the luckiest guys on the face of the earth. So I'm in that respect, I think you're right.
Well, it also, I'm sure, of course, depends on the company you're keeping and the kind of collaborators that you're finding, whether it is, you know, working with Judd Apatow as you start to like, you know, get into comedy or now finding this kindred spirit in James Gunn. James Gunn, you know, having watched, you only have to watch the first 5 minutes of the first episode of Peacemaker to see like, oh, we're going to some interesting places with this character and you would expect nothing less from James Gunn. Do you find that you found an immediate kind of kindred spirit in James in that his sensibilities, his... what might some people might deem as extreme in some ways actually suits you and fits your definition of entertainment and fun.
So now we're shifting on to professional exploration. And for me, I don't knock on anybody for their perspective and their choices. But for me, professionally, like what I'll do on camera as a character, I love to be challenged. And it's, man, being so involved in the WWE for so long, perception is reality. And people out there who make decisions and make entertainment only perceive you as what they see. And for so long, I was perceived as the John Cena character. And that's it, tip to tail. Like, that is it.
Right.
And then there were people like Judd and James. And there's a list of folks who were like, hey, you know, I think we can pry something else out of that pair of jean shorts you got on there. And I'm grateful to those people, because not only did they give me an opportunity to show more depth and put some more tools in the tool belt, but they made me better as a performer. James, yeah. It makes me better every day. Even when I'm not working on a project with James, I was saying to him yesterday, I hear his voice in the back of my head. These little, like, he very much reminds me of Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon has these little moments where it's like a small nugget of wisdom that never leaves you and you always remember it. And James has bestowed, you know, 10 or more of those on me to make me a better professional. So when it comes to challenging myself professional, that's a lot less of giving of myself personally, letting someone into my life. I love being able to challenge myself, to be vulnerable, to walk that talk, essentially. Like, you know, my character wouldn't do that. Is your character wouldn't do that? Or are you uncomfortable doing that? And if you're uncomfortable doing that, well, then why? And when you get to the core of the why, maybe you can find the courage to throw yourself out there. I mean, in Peacemaker, by far, I will say, is my biggest swing to date. And I think that's because James and I had a, you know, real heartfelt conversations on the Suicide Squad, and we got to talk about a lot of life issues. And when you take those personal conversations and you put them into a fictional character, and that's, man, that's really what I love about performing and entertaining. You get to dive in with almost with no boundaries. You can be as brave as you want to. And I really love how James really went all in on that with Peacemaker.
I think people are going to be surprised, especially as you progress in the show. I've seen the first 7 of 8 episodes. You might think it's one thing at the start, and by the end, you show so many different colors, more than I've ever seen you as an actor in this. You kind of get to do it all. It's pretty remarkable. You get to have your cake and eat it too. There's certainly big action and comedy but there's more dramatic stuff than you've ever done. Were you surprised at how, I don't know, just how many layers you were able to peel of the onion in this enterprise?
No, in seeing, man, you know, James is extremely talented in just writing, crafting, and developing narrative. And I think he's at his best where he can get a group of toys that haven't yet been shown and then define exactly what they are. You know, I was very, very excited to be part of that, especially when he called me up in the middle of the pandemic. It was like, hey, thinking of doing a Peacemaker series. I'm like, well, I thought Peacemaker was dead. So what?
Does that work?
Yeah. And he's like, well, we'll fix it. Said, okay, I'm in. But I think that's also, I mean, I've never done episodic as opposed, you know, aside from WWE. And that's, if you look at the course of John Cena over the WWE, you know, the sentiment from lifelong watchers is like, oh, there wasn't much character development. But if you look into the subtle nuances, there really was. But it's all really subtle in a performing stage where everything is so huge. Peacemaker, you can lean into those nuances and everyone has gravity. And yeah. I really enjoyed how James gave that to all the characters, not just Peacemaker.
What was your relationship growing up with comics? Were you a comic book guy? Were you Marvel? Were you DC? All the above or none of the above?
I wasn't a comic book guy. My escape was obviously pro wrestling. You know, I was a damn near historian by the time I was 10 and fell back in love with it when the WWE was fighting Turner in the ratings wars. But I was like a fringe fan when the Batman movies came out, when the Keaton Batman movies came out. I was right at the right age to be influenced by all that. But I really never got into comics. But like watching Hanna-Barbera animation half hour before I went to school, I would see Fantastic Four. So I there are certain comic book characters that stand out in my mind and I remember, but nothing, I wouldn't say I was definitely not as much of a fan of comics as I was like sports or pro wrestling.
Was part of the, you know, the way you molded your body, the way you devoted yourself to creating like this image, this physical personification of yourself, was part of that motivated by one person? Was it about just being obsessed with wrestling? I talked, for instance, I'm kind of buddies with Joe Manganiello, and Joe Manganiello basically decided like, I'm going to become a superhero that I read about. Like, I want to turn my body into that. For you, obviously it wasn't comic books, but was it watching professional wrestlers or Arnold, or was it something like, what was that about?
No, it was actually probably the closest correlation would be an ad you'd see in the back of the comic book for the dude kicking sand in the wimpy guy's face. I just wanted to develop an extra sense of security, a sense of armor, if you will. I got my ass kicked every day. And I remember asking my dad for a weight bench at age 10 and him denying me. And then at age 11 and him denying me. And then at age 12, my grandfather, rest his soul, he probably was like, John, just get the kid an effing weight bench. And he did. And what my dad didn't realize is I was getting beat up and picked on for the way I looked, the way I acted, the way I dressed. I wasn't brave enough to tell my dad like, hey, this is why I'd like to have this piece of equipment. But as soon as he got it for me, I started working out, and it wasn't to look or emulate anybody's behavior or look like anyone else. It literally was to just get people to stop picking on me.
Right. In terms of, I mean, you already talked about sort of in the wrestling career, how there was acting involved, and maybe more than people imagined and more variations than people imagined. What do you remember when you started to think seriously about pursuing an acting career outside of the ring? And did it feel within your grasp or intimidating or what?
I think every shift in our shell of comfortable is intimidating. When we're used to something and we decide to do something else or change something in our lives, it could be if you're used to a morning cup of coffee and you ditch it, that's intimidating. I began to look at, when I hit about the 10, 11, 12 year mark in the WWE, every show, every night, all the time, I was still so excited about going out there every night. And I think that's regardless of how people feel about me as a performer or character, I don't think they can say that I lack enthusiasm. So being a former football player and going into, you know, sports entertainment, that was a way for me to stay fit, for me as an athlete to have a purpose, a season, something to train for. I didn't lose what I had gained through the first, you know, 10 years of physical training, but then it morphed into something else. And 10 years after being on television, it was the ability to tell stories. I didn't love the strength. I didn't love the falling down. I didn't love the, hey, I want to challenge myself to do a new stunt. If anything, my athletic ability was getting less and less. So I had to challenge myself to tell different stories. And it was then, because, you know, back doing the Marine and 12 rounds, it was a business decision. Hey, we want you to go build WWE films so more people will come to WWE events.
Right. That's serving a, that the mothership.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
But when it's a money grab, I wanted to be back in the ring. I wanted, you know, 15,000 people cheering you on, because there's no energy like that, especially as a young 20-something man. I was riding a lightning bolt. I wanted to get back to the lightning bolt. But then as you get older and wiser and maybe a little bit more seasoned physically, I still had a passion for going out in front of a live audience. And it wasn't because I wanted to prove to them I could do a flip. It was because I loved trying to get a story across. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, man, maybe I was looking at this thing all wrong. And originally when I got to be on film, I hated all the wait time. WWE's live and it's fast and it's done and you're on to the next one. I didn't like the fact that there wasn't instant feedback so I could tell if I did something good or not. Right. I wasn't very proficient. So it was ditching that morning cup of coffee where I felt nervous and vulnerable and I was just getting that ball rolling. So I was like, I don't want to do something wrong, so this will all be over. Because I mean, I shouldn't have this job in the first place. But, you know, after a decade in with the WWE and having some sense of security and stability and like, yeah, you know, it's going to end and it should probably end around now. So let's take a couple big swings here. I also realized that I had a passion for storytelling, and that's kind of what brought the ability. Like it started with Brian Robbins taking the chance on me in the Fred movies, literally being a parody of John Cena, and then Judd and so on and so forth. And it just became, yeah, I'd like to do this. And of course I was playing the same character in WWE, and I'd already been told like, hey, there's going to be no deviation. You're going to be this guy. And that's fine. But then you have these other entities being like, hey, you want to be a weird, confused guy who maybe is naked and curses a lot. And then you want to do this. And then you want to be a drug dealer for Tina Fey in this movie. So it was really fun. And I also began to have more respect for people on set and what they do and why it takes so long.
Right.
And I began to have more understanding of the process. And now I'm at a comfortable space where I enjoy all of it.
I find it also interesting when I was looking back at sort of the evolution of the film career, outside of those early films like The Marine and 12 Rounds, between then and now, you didn't do a lot of action vehicles, actually. You weren't like being like that wasn't the lane you were traversing. I mean, Peacemaker arguably is kind of like an F9 is kind of like you getting back into that kind of action genre. You've really devoted most of your film career to comedy. And I'm curious, like you kind of alluded to this a little bit, but I don't know, if I look at some of your contemporaries, a lot of them tried repeatedly to kind of like do the action thing from the get-go, maybe because—
Well, I fall into that group. I tried, but it was only because the people kind of giving me those opportunities, that's the best I could get. And it finally got to a point. I remember one of my best friends and agent, Dan Bame, is on this call silently. I remember getting to a point, it might've been in 2009, where we had just done another bad movie or another, you know, without, and that, when I say bad, I mean, my heart wasn't in it.
Right.
I didn't give all I could to the performance. So it wasn't something people were interested in. And I remember us having just a dinner and me saying to him, and this is his job, like, hey, we're never doing movies again, are we? And he's like, no, I don't think we are.
Wow.
So, you know, I love him for many reasons, but honesty and communication are right up there at the top of the pyramid. And he was, and this is a guy who's like, no person I'm supposed to get movie work for, we're probably never doing that again. So I also came to grips with the fact that, it would be over. And I think the reason I was okay with that is, in my mind, I always thought, if I'm going to do an action movie, do it in front of 20,000 people. There's nothing better, you know, and I can do 250 action movies a year.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, you want to be an action hero, dude, you're already a fucking action hero.
Right.
So I was fulfilled, I guess, in that sense. And now I guess that's why I was drawn to comedy. I always wanted to do jokey stuff. I mean, I really did my best to try to integrate that in WWE, but with the PG constraints and, you know, just all the limitations, a lot of people were like, the stupid, quirky Cena comedy again. I wish he would just be kick-ass John Cena, but I wanted to try because I felt I had to. And then you get an opportunity to be a different character and to try to make people laugh. And I really enjoyed that challenge.
And it's funny now, I mean, coming full circle, Peacemaker kind of blends it all together, right? You kind of get your cake and eat it too. You get the comedy, but you get kind of the action chops in there too. And it's just kind of, it seems like the character that you were born to play. I don't know what that says about you.
No, man, honestly, this is my second straight day of interviews and I've heard that multiple times. And that is the most flattering thing that someone can say, because I always go back, I relate everything to WWE and the audience can't view me as anything but t-shirt, jean shorts, ball cap. When I grew my hair out, everybody's like, you ruined my fucking childhood, man. What are you doing? You can't do this. You can't, because they are used to me. That was the role I was born to play. And that's a gift because it allows me to have a wonderful extended career as that role. But it's also a super challenge because it's tough to get people to take a chance on you. So when people say, man, Peacemaker was a role I feel you were born to play, or like, I don't see anybody else playing Peacemaker but you, that's so flattering because I got my heart and soul in it. And it didn't take 20 years to build up that cyclone of like, I don't see anybody else playing Peacemaker except John. So that's right. Truly flattering when I hear that, man. Thank you.
As you well know, prior to Peacemaker, I mean, again, partially because of the physicality and the WWE stuff, you had been fan casted like repeatedly for different superhero roles. And I'm curious, like, were there any that you came close to? I mean, I feel like I've asked you about, and many people asked you about, for instance, Shazam over the years.
Yeah.
Was that one you went up for? Was that one you really wanted?
I can't tell you how many superhero roles I've been rejected for. Shazam is certainly one. A brief try at the Deadpool universe, rejection. Shazam was a Dikembe Mutombo. There was a few in the Marvel universe, rejected. So, I kept trying.
was there one that you really, in your heart of hearts, was like that kind of like you really wanted that felt right for you at the time that kind of stuck in your
mind? I think because of the fact that I here I am saying this in a waistcoat and a half Windsor, I think like a child. So Shazam was super interesting to me. And when I read the script, a lot of times, like, this is the thing. I don't just chase, I want to do this. I always have to read it. James Gunn is the only person that gets a free pass. If he says, I'm doing this thing, do you want it? And the only reason he gets a free pass is his reputation as a storyteller. He just does not let up. He's claws in every piece. And I know I know it's going to be good because he starts from a blank page and that's it. But I always read it. I always read the story to make sure, one, I like it. And two, it falls within my skill set. I do want to challenge myself, but I don't want the first time I do something to be on screen for a paying customer. I want to get practice and be able to perform at a level that's consumer quality. So I read all those scripts and I read all those parts and I was like, man, I really think I could add to this. And just rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection. But I guess that's what makes, you know, the lows make the highs high, you know?
Exactly.
And the crazy thing was, I wasn't first on the list for Peacemaker. James had a long list and it happened by accident too. He's like, hey, I'm in Atlanta. I just love to come and talk with you for a second. Sat down in his pre-production office, which was literally like a war headquarters where you could see the whole movie and poster board taped around his office. And he started talking about Peacemaker. And I was like, well, I think you should do it. Like, so I'm not rejected? Like, this is the point of the conversation. You usually say like, hey, love you, man, but we're just going another direction. So do we shake hands and part ways, or are we going to do business together? And the ones that I tried for got rejected for, and the one that I wasn't even looking for kind of fell in my lap.
I always like to talk to folks about what movies they consider their comfort movies. I asked you for yours and you chose an interesting one. These are always fascinating to see what people choose.
Yeah.
You chose an Adam McKay film, but maybe not the Adam McKay film that most people would consider a comforting film. John, tell me why you chose what you chose.
So I chose The Big Short. And it's a wonderful film by Adam McKay with a star-studded cast. He certainly is really good at wrangling a bunch of talented folks all together. And he's also good at hitting you in the face with some real shit. And at the same time, you can laugh about it and you can have fun. And he's also good at explaining really complicated things. And he does have a unique style of filmmaking in The Big Short in particular. Shattering the fourth wall and the cutaways of like Margot Robbie in a bathtub or the late Anthony Bourdain telling you how to make more of your restaurant product and explaining the mortgage-backed security market and explaining what a tranche is. Like, I learned something. I learned something with every Adam McKay film, and he makes me laugh and I learned something in the process. And I think he's got a really... just a wonderful talent for that. But it's a film that I'll never turn off. It's a film that I watch at least once a year. And there's a lot of core takeaways for me. Being greedy certainly is a lesson he hammers home, and it's just how blind people are by greed to the point that they don't even know what they're doing. So in my life, as these opportunities come up, I want to be able to chase opportunities that I'm passionate about, not simply be passionate about greed, because that will eventually lead to meltdown.
Right.
And they also say that history repeats itself. So I now keep a closer eye on what I'm doing personally, the interest rate market, the global housing market. There's the Evergrande experience right now, halfway across the world, is teetering on the potential of another Big Short. And I think that's a movie that he takes you on an entertaining ride through mortgage-backed securities.
Another one of those, exactly.
I just think anybody that can do that, anybody who can take such a topic like that, like a boring topic, and the reason it's boring is so people can get greedy off of it. They don't want you to know about it. And I really think it's informative, and everyone who sees it for the first time is blown away.
No, you're speaking my language. I worship at the altar of Adam McKay. I mean, I loved I think he could have retired on his comedic work. He's one of the finest comedy writers ever. And what he's done with Vice, Big Short, and Don't Look Up, I'm a big fan of. I love that he's putting his chips in where he can actually, you don't expect a movie to change the world, but you got to give it a shot in these times, man. You got to like talk about the issues we're confronting, or like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, not necessarily. You can just make something for people to laugh at.
No, and I love escapist entertainment, but I mean, I also like the ambition to go for it, to try.
What I really enjoy about him is he makes you think.
Yeah.
Even in parody situations of like, I know that's a parody, but is this the way it really is? There is some stuff that'll hit you over the head more like Vice. And there is some stuff that'll make you think like Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
When it's completely done in parody, but at the same time, it makes you think about a lot of other things. And who is it? Jimmy V that said, think, laugh, and cry in one day. And that's a great day.
Right. Looking ahead for you, always a busy slate. I'm excited that you worked with Matthew Vaughn on Argyle, which has an insane cast. And Matthew is a very unique talent, and I'm glad you're now part of the ensemble of the Matthew Vaughn universe.
I am a Kingsman super fan.
Are you?
Yeah. I just love that franchise and how he did it and how he developed it. And I'm certainly a fan of his work. And it was a pleasure to be in involved in such a big project. I can't wait for that one.
So F9, you obviously joined the ginormous franchise as Jacob, who we see in a much different spot by the end of that film than he is at the outset. Do you know the plans ahead? Have you seen scripts? Have you heard anything?
Nope, but I know that I love the Fast universe, and I have ever since the first movie came out. I've always been an auto enthusiast, and I know Fast has evolved into something different. It is now just global, knock you out of your seat. What are they going to do next? And now, honestly, even to a point where, and I love this, as the golden embers of the sun sets on the mythology, they can wink at themselves as well. And I love the fact that they're starting to do that and take the audience on this is kind of the end of the book, and we're wrapping it up, and we're going to space.
You guys wanted us to go into space. Yeah, we're going to give you that.
I really think it's cool that they are having fun with the mythology as it comes to an end. I'm eager to find out if I can, get in the car and drive again. But somebody who's as into cars as I am, and the franchise still is littered with wonderful automobilia, the Helen Mirren ripping through downtown London in a Noble. Like, there's nothing more kick-ass than that, I like the fact that there's still something for the enthusiast in the franchise, and that it still is very rooted in car culture. And that was a dream get for me. That was something, again, I thought would never be possible and kind of fell into my lap, and what an amazing opportunity.
pop culture wise lately, any stuff that jumps out at you that you're obsessed with? I mean, I've heard that you're an anime fan. I don't know if you saw Arcane. I just watched that one. What's the genre? What's the franchise? That's obsessing John Cena lately?
Man, books. I'm reading more. Between breaks, I got the Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. That's the latest one I'm trying to rip through. I just finished the first volume of the Gulag Archipelago. That's a long book. My goal was to read one book that I don't think, or nor do I want to read in a year. And I just managed to squeeze that in before we turned to 2022. So that was an informative root canal, but it was a lot of reading. As far as shows go, Ted Lasso has been the only one that I've been like, I just rifled through that. And it's tough to get me to sit down for more than a half an hour. And that one, I think I got through in like 2 days.
Yeah.
It was just really good.
And where are you at right now in terms of the material you're getting? Do you feel like, are there still kinds of films, TV parts that, obviously the aperture has widened for you significantly in the last 10 years, but is there still, are there still kinds of things that you wish you were thought of more for nowadays?
Well, so I think that's a great question. And if I want to be considered for something, there are things within my control that I can do. I just basically I'm confident in the abilities that I have. I'm trying to challenge myself to widen that scope and be a better performer every day. And I'm ready for when Vin is like, do you want to be in Fast? I'm ready for the moment where James Gunn says, I'd like you to be Peacemaker. I'm ready for the moment where Matthew Vaughn says, hey, could you slide into London to sneak into Argyle? Like, I don't know. I believe opportunity finds us. And all I can do is be ready. I had a wonderful experience in New York filming a film called The Independent, where I got to play a role that I never would have been able to play.
You got Brian Cox in there, some really heavy hitters, right?
Oh my God. And not only was I not the smartest person in the room, which is a great thing, but I was also doing something that was way like not comedy, not physical, true drama, true character work. And that's fun. And that was cool. And if that opportunity spawns to more opportunities, then great. And I'm currently looking at some stuff that is on a different path. And you just have to, like, if it's important to you, make it important. It shouldn't be about the money unless the money's important. Then do that and be okay with that. And that's your driving force. A lot of the choices for me have nothing to do with financial reward, because I know that comes with good work. It may not show up eventually. It may not show up immediately, but it'll show up eventually.
Yeah.
So I just, like I said, my litmus test is read it and like it. And if I read a story and like it, when I read a script, I don't want to know who I'm reading for. I want to read it. And that way, if I'm involved, I'm like, hey, you can put me in any part. I don't care. I'll do it. You know? So that's kind of where I'm at. I read all the time. It's a good thing that I'm, you know, trying to dive into books, because I'm also reading scripts. I read, you know, hell, I must've read 300 scripts last year.
Wow.
So I love reading. And if I can't make it through page 14, it could be The Big Short, but I won't lend myself to it, because I don't want to do that project wrong. You know, if I go on there, got to keep the lights on, and I go on there in a grumpy mood and like, just want to get out of here and on to the next one.
Yeah.
That is infectious, man. But if you read a piece of material cover to cover in one shot and you're excited, and then you start gathering the group of people that are going to do it and you're excited, and then you step on set the first day and you're excited, you have to know there's going to be shitty days at work. Always. WWE taught me that. Like, there's going to be shitty days. But if you love what you do, the shitty days are less shitty. And you can always find that nugget to be like, yeah, but I'm going to be invisible today. You know, like I get to do that's, you know, what's my biggest problem right now? Because I'm going to get to go out in front of a sold out house and be invisible. And I think that helps that helps those shitty days. It's not to say they don't exist. They exist on all of our lives. But even, you know, there's a lot of performers that this process is arduous. This press, I got like 60 interviews today, but this is part of the process. And when I sign up for Peacemaker, the reasons I sign up for Peacemaker, I can't pretend that this doesn't exist. So I'm excited about this because I'm excited about Peacemaker, and that goes all the way back. That's like trickle down to me reading it and being like, yep, let's go. Which it helps all the way around.
I appreciate the time today, man, especially I think I'm one of 60 for you today. So I appreciate the passion. One at a time, right? Congratulations, man. It's great to see the progression of the career, the attitude you have, and the talent that you bring to every project. As I said, I'm a big fan of this one. I'm a big fan of yours. And I hope to see you at a Cold Stone Creamery in the near future.
Man, I tell you what, we have to make that happen. Not to say that I'm going to do 13 rounds. I don't know if I can make it through page 14 of that script.
I can't take it either.
But that Cold Stone challenge might be some merit to that.
Fair enough. We'll see you there, buddy. Thanks again.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.